Hi, this is Rosie from On Broadcast, and you're listening to The Midweek Drive on Siren FM.
We have moved on in association with Pharmanor Nutritional Supplements Limited on another one of our little London location reports. We, of course, being Katie Grimerson, Rachel Warren, Ed Wellman, and yours truly, Alex Levchuk. And we've been joined, Rachel, by a gentleman you've spoken to several times already on the Thursday morning Midweek Drive morning edition, of course. And that happens to be whom?
Richard Fitzwilliams.
The one and only Richard Fitzwilliams. Richard, good to see you as ever.
And it's very good to see you all, because it's particularly good to be in the National Theatre with its long history, with the amazing productions that we've had from it, and the fact that we're going to have a very interesting time here.
We're going to be speaking very shortly, effectively, to the head of special projects. That would be Robin Hawkes. We might even have a brief chat with Mary Parker, who's the publicity side of things. Actually, Robin Hawkes is the Director of Artistic Administration. It's absolutely vital we get that sorted through, really, because titles are so important. And we'll be meeting up with Mary and Robin at the stage door in a matter of moments. But, Richard, you did a bit of recce on this place, and it's got a lot of history, and it's also quite a controversial building.
Yes. Firstly, I think the point has to be made, we're very lucky we finally got one, because for so many years in the 19th century, in the first half of the 20th, there was this debate about having one, and there wasn't. And then Olivier began in 1963 at the Old Vic, forming a National Theatre Company, and it began with Peter O'Toole's Hamlet. And subsequent to that, for 13 years, there were some impressive productions. Finally, the building opened with, and I can remember this very well indeed, Albert Finney's Tamburlaine with Marlowe's Mighty Lion. Finney had the voice to carry it. It was very impressive. But the building, it was designed by Sir Denis Lasdon. There are those who regard it as a brutalist. Certainly, if you dislike concrete, you'll have a problem here. Prince Charles very memorably compared it to a nuclear power station that had been put up in the heart of London, which we'd allowed. John Betjeman liked it. There have been a variety of views. It is felt that, putting it mildly, it is severe. Equally, you can get used to it.
Let's just do a little straw poll, as ever, a little live straw poll. Katie, what are your views on the thing? Is it brutalist? Do you side with Prince Charles as a concrete monstrosity, or do you go down John Betjeman's route? What are your thoughts?
I'm not really sure.
Katie's undecided. This could be crucial in many ways. Ed?
I think it's stunning, and I love the way the shapes fit together. I don't find it objectionable in the least. Having said that, if you described it to me without me being here, I would probably not want to see it.
The power of the word, Richard, the power of the word.
Concrete in London, yeah. But it works somehow, doesn't it?
Well, I would be very interested in your second opinion when we've been round a lot of it, because it works in some ways, but it can be infuriating. There's no doubt that what you've got here is three theatres. You've got the Olivia Theatre, which seats nearly 1,200. You've got the Littleton, which seats some 850. And currently under renovation, you've got the Cottesloe, seating some 400. And that's substituted at the moment outside with the shed. So with half the money coming from either the Arts Council or other bodies, that is this public funding linked to the National, so great things are expected.
And I deliberately hold back on Rachel because I didn't want to come to her while she was in the midst of sort of dealing with nutritional sustenance, etc. What are your thoughts, Rachel?
I think I can see what people would say that it's a concrete monstrosity, because when you look at it at first, but it's with the combination of like glass and different textures, it makes it much more artsy. So it does, it works.
Rachel Warren, much more artsy, Richard.
It has its very own characteristic. It has grown on me over the years. I do, however, find it irresistible in parts. It is brutalist, and there's no question that if you have an aversion to concrete, you are rather overfond of the West End with its
collapsing ceilings.
I thought that might come up. Ever speaking a cynic in that one,
and please.
It was absolutely true. It's happened recently, of course. But there's no doubt it's a unique building, but the whole of the South Bank, of course, is done in this particular style, so it's part of something that's invaluable.
And surely it must be, it's a blank canvas, if you like, isn't it? It's not got any frills, or I find some of the West End buildings far too garish, actually. And given that you're showcasing art here in the form of film, is it not right that it is utterly based
stage theatricality? Film is the National Film Theatre. We were there this morning.
Close by, you know, it's still art, isn't it?
Nice get out, Ed.
Well, obviously. But I like it. I do like it.
I think that there's no question that if you see a play, for example, if you're in the Olivier, it has a revolving drum, which is famous. And also the whole intention is that wherever your seat is, you will get a good view of the stage. So, I mean, that aspect of it, yes. And the other thing is the performance side of it. If you happen to wander in at any particular hour, you may find there's a lecture on that you'd be interested in, or you may find that there's a musical performance going on in the foyer. So it's very much part of the South Bank complex, and that with the British Film Institute next door, and obviously the remarkable Royal Festival Hall and the Hayward Gallery and so on. I mean, you've got one of the finest arts complexes in the world.
And we'll continue this when we actually go and speak to the aforementioned guru, who's indeed the Director of Artistic Administration, Robin Hawkes, in a few moments. Well, we have moved on, and we're delighted to speak to the true living legend who is...
I'm Robin Hawkes, Director of Artistic Administration at the National Theatre.
Robin, that would probably seem to be in many ways the dream job for many folk, etc. What, from your own perspective, because you've been here for a few years now, how has your career pathway developed, and is this ultimately say, yes, I look out through the office window there, I see the Thames, I see St Paul's, I see London, I'm sitting at the heart of theatre land in many ways. What are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, the National is a great place to work. Actually, this is a relatively new role for me. I've just been doing this job since November, but yeah, I've been at the National for... well, I think 5.5 years now, and during that time I've worked through a range of different roles and departments, and yeah, this is a new role actually, which I've been doing since November, and kind of is a mixture of all the things I've enjoyed best about what I've been doing at the National up to this point.
And of course, as Richard rightly pointed out, lots of construction work going on at present, so that's a nice sort of way of bringing art and all sorts of things together.
Yeah, it's been quite interesting over the last several months to try to keep the theatre alive as a building that's open to the public whilst the construction work's been going on around us. I think a lot of places might have sensibly chosen to shut down for a year and let it all happen, but we didn't want to have a year go by without any performances.
It's a challenge. Richard, questions for yourself.
Well, the shed, I wondered how that was deputising for the Cottesloe, which of course is going to be renamed Dorfman,
right.
Is it not? How is it working having another theatre in front?
It's been great to have the shed for this period whilst the Cottesloe's been closed. It's a really different space to the Cottesloe in terms of the facilities available, technical equipment and the like, and also the audience environment. It's very much more stripped back than the Cottesloe ever was, and the restrictions on the facilities have actually been quite an opportunity really for us to program different types of work that we wouldn't normally have been able to produce in the Cottesloe necessarily. And so yeah, we've tried to encourage our creative teams to see the advantage in using their ingenuity to produce different types of shows for us.
On the subject of creativity, I was looking at the amazing number of productions that have been hits since the National Theatre was founded. Mm. And I just wanted to ask, I presume Warhorse could be called the most successful ever, but just to mention two or three, The History Boys, for example, The Madness of King George, I just wondered if you had any personal favourites, and also which would you say were the most commercially successful, and which the most, if you're able to say, the artistically successful that you could think back on?
Well, yeah, it's definitely true that I think Warhorse by now can be categorised as the most commercially successful production that the National's ever had. We've just reached our 5 millionth audience member for Warhorse, if you add up all the productions around the world. And it's going to be broadcast on NT Live to cinemas, around the world again next week. I think we're playing in 800 cinemas, something like that. So that's going to add a significant number of audience members again. Personal favourites? Well, yeah, Warhorse is a personal favourite. I worked quite closely on that production for a few years. And then the other show that's close to a lot of our hearts here is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night Time, which has been playing in the West End, and then just over the last few weeks has been playing some performances for selected audiences.
If they don't check the ceilings, what will happen, really? That's a bottom line there. Sorry, I mentioned about the collapsing theatre beforehand. It's a different line. Ed, we of course saw The History Boys a week or so ago at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, and you also like the building.
I do like this building very much. I mean, does your daily schedule allow you to go and watch a play or to as a member of the audience and actually see it from their perspective? Or do you always have your kind of management hat on in some sort of way?
Yes. No, I think for anybody who works in a producer-type role, there's nothing more important than sitting in the theatre watching a show with the audience around you and observing, obviously, what's happening on stage, but what's happening on the auditorium as well. Whether that fits into the regular working schedule, I suppose it depends how long your regular working day is. But yes, if you're happy to stay on into the evenings, then it's really important to see as much work as possible.
And I guess this is, as you started by saying, Alex, this is as good as it gets. I mean, this is exciting for us just to sit in this building, never mind see anything artistic going on here. But I mean, where would the road go for you if you could have any job in the world? I mean, where do you go after your esteemed position here, perhaps?
Is it Broadway?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, we've produced a couple of shows on Broadway, which I've been a part of, Warhorse there and One Man, Two Governors as well. And that's a fascinating and energetic and exciting place to work. The great thing about working for the National, though, is that there's this wonderful spectrum of working on these huge hit shows that play to millions of people, and then the scale goes right down to the type of work that we play in the shed or in kind of pop-up spaces around the building, which can play to audiences of, you know, only 5, 10, 20 people at a time. So what's great about working here is that diversity, actually.
And I know that listeners of Lincoln will say, well, the shed, that's amazing. I didn't realise it was so artistic. And you sort of head off after a show. But Rachel, thoughts or questions for yourself?
Curious to Talk of the Nighttime. That sounds brilliant. I've read the book. That could be probably a really brilliant play. What, you say you helped on it. What do you actually do? Do you do that, you say artistically, but what are you involved with doing?
Yes, so my role on Curious Incident, oh, it's not really a creative role, no. I work as a in a more kind of producer role, which means that...
You want how much for the budget?
Yeah, those kind of questions. And lots of discussion with the creative team right at the very front end of the process in terms of how we're planning it. Yes, setting the budget and the parameters, but also talking about what the types of audiences are that we're trying to reach and how best to get to those people and what the schedule should be and you know, kind of the more philosophical questions at the start of the process.
Any follow-ups, Rachel?
I just said that must be very exciting because you work with like, set designers and all sorts of people to get it all working. Everything's cool.
Yeah, I think that's the best part about my job, really, is that I get to work with all of the creative team members and see them work together as a team. One of the things that excites me most about theatre is the fact that it really is a kind of team game rather than down to the... There are individuals who have most amazing vision and creativity, but you need to have a group of people, including the creative team and the actors, in order to make it work.
We say the same thing, Robin, with Midweek Drive Morning Edition, actually. It's a team sort of action. We often somebody sort of set a radio show on stage. Katie, thoughts on things for yourself?
What do you find most rewarding about your job?
I think the most rewarding thing about my job is sitting down at the first performance or the opening night, usually the first performance, actually the first preview of a new show that I've been thinking about and planning for months, maybe a couple of years ahead of that date, and then finally see the curtain go up, whether literally or metaphorically, and sharing that experience with all of the people in the audience for the first time.
Richard, any further closing questions?
Well, with the amount of building and the changes, it's very interesting to see the plans downstairs and the little miniature models too. I presume that the National Theatre is on pretty good financial footing. I mean, the what is it, some 35% from the Arts Council? Is that the...
It's slightly less than that these days. I think the percentage of our budget that's contributed by the Arts Council is somewhere between 20 and 25% now. We're in a relatively healthy place, and of course the fundraising for this capital project of the Building Works has been a huge operation, which is continuing now. We're still trying to raise money to finish it off. It's a tough environment, as we all know at the moment. Yeah, our regular funding from the Arts Council has decreased in cash terms by something like 25% over the course of the last 5 years. We've been fortunate in that we've had this string of quite successful commercial work, including Warhorse and Curious Incident and other shows, which have helped kind of plug some of the gap that's been left by the funding cuts that we've received.
One of the most remarkable things, I think this was under Nicholas Heitner when he was artistic director, which I think was so essential in bringing theatre to a larger audience, was this: if you were under 26, you could get in for £5. I presume that is permanent, is it?
Yes, that continues. That's the entry pass scheme here. Which...
That's good for two of us, at least.
I think it's really valuable as a way of getting new audiences into the theatre. And, you know, yes, it seems like a generous thing to do, but actually it's quite a business decision as well, because hopefully once we've had people in that age group come and see a couple of shows and really enjoy them, then they're going to be the people buying the tickets for years and years and years to come after that.
And looking ahead in terms of some of the upcoming productions, would you like to just share with us some of the sort of key things that the National Theatre will be doing over the next couple of months or so?
Yeah, sure. So next couple of things opening here. Well, actually, the next thing to open is a short run of a new Daniel Kitson piece called Analogue, which he's just performed in New York at St Anne's Warehouse and is bringing over to premiere here in the UK. And then following that, there are a couple of new productions which we've produced here ourselves. A revival of Small Family Business, the Eightbourne classic, which Adam Penford, one of our close young directors, is directing, and Howard Davies' production of The Silver Tassie and The Littleton is the other show just about to go into rehearsals here, which we're all looking forward to very much, and obviously has a really great tie-in for the 2014 commemoration anniversary that's about to take place.
And I know, Richard, you're very keen to obviously mention Laurence Olivier, who was very much at the heart of the National Theatre.
Yes, I much like the statue of him outside as Henry V. Yeah. But, I mean, he was such a driving force, wasn't he? Such an extraordinary actor. And periodically, these anniversaries which honour him, I mean, very much a part, so to speak, of the fabric of the building, you could say, in historical terms.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, obviously, his time here didn't cross over with mine, but nevertheless...
I think you're looking remarkably young, Robin, actually, from that point of view, which is wonderful. Yeah.
Thanks. The echoes of him can still be felt around the building. There's a huge, great photograph of him up in the workshops at the backstage part of the building, kind of watching over us all as we go about our day-to-day business, which is great. And I don't know, I just imagining how exciting it might have been to have had a director who is leader of the organisation but also an actor on the stage, which of course none of his successors, all of his successors were directors rather than actors, and I guess that must have made things feel quite different when the curtain went up on the opening night and there he was standing on the stage in front of you.
Robin, it's been a genuine delight just sharing some thoughts and aspects of the National Theatre and your work within that. Any other final questions, team? Are we okay?
We're good, thank you. That was fascinating.
So I think we're a round of applause. But it's good. Well, yes, absolutely. Yes, superb. So we're still actually at the National Theatre and we're talking with hushed tones because, Richard, you've guided us through to the
Olivium, actually in the auditorium. Looking down, it's quite awesome looking down from the top, that you've got nearly 1,200 seats and you can see and hear from any part of this theatre. I mean, this was the challenge and I think they've risen to it triumphantly. It is the main theatre in the National.
Rachel, what are your thoughts on this?
It's incredible. It looks brilliant. Really does. We'd love to see a show here.
I think we'll get that arranged. Ed, as a performer?
Well, it smells like a theatre, and it certainly gives me a buzz of actually wanting to take my classical music and put it on stage and get into musicals and all that. I love the acoustic panelling as well that's hanging. It's just fascinating, actually, to see the equipment and the people at work here.
Katie's so overwhelmed she's had to take five, but we'll head off anyway. You're listening to Southside Broadcasting and the Midweek Drive. Midweek Drive Morning Edition. The lights have come up.
Well, lights coming up remind me of the occasion when I was at the Olivier near the front, seeing a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, and at the period of the interval, I had a bottle of water in my hand, and the Roman general playing an idiotic character called Glorioso descended from the stage with his sword and dragged me up onto it for everyone to laugh at, and I was forced to hold my water bottle in one hand, the Roman standard, a ridiculous-looking thing, in the other, for several hundred people to have a great deal of fun with, and then when I put them down, a minute or two later, he reappeared from the wings and forced me to take them up again. So it just proves, occasionally, when you go on stage and it looks as if it's impromptu, sometimes it actually is.
We have gone outside once again, and the flat cap has gone on, or in Richard's case, the almost baseball cap, I have to say, Richard. I'm very impressed.
Well, actually, I have to be frank as to why I'm wearing the baseball cap, because when put in my pocket, it actually sticks there, otherwise I lose one a week.
That's the message, clearly. But is that the message for, as we see that classic line that tennis balls, my liege, we are such stuff and such like material. Actually, he's mixing the Tempest with Henry V. Of course, we're talking about the delights of Olivia doing his piece as Henry V in his St. Crispin's Day scenario.
It's very interesting to be outside the National Theatre and looking at the statue of the first artistic director, Laurence Olivier, later Lord Olivier of Brighton, as it reminds us. He began the National Theatre at the Old Vic in 1963 and was its artistic director for some years, succeeded subsequently by Sir Peter Hall. It was quite a controversial succession, and Hall, of course, is still a legend of the theatre. He was succeeded by Richard Eyre, who had a close relationship with the playwright David Hare, and several of his plays was put on here, and Eyre was succeeded by Trevor Nunn, who introduced the musical to the National Theatre. Nicholas Heitner, the most recent artistic director, bar the current one, Rufus Norris, he did two things, I think, tremendously important. One was the £5 scheme, which gave access to...
You mentioned with Robin earlier, of course.
Which was, I think, very, very significant. And the other thing was the... which the Royal Opera House and was also doing it, and that is that you can film live productions, and that also helps to spread the word. It's amazing the amount of talent over these years that has been seen on the stage at the National. If you look at so many of the great names and some of the performances and the plays, Inspector Call or Inspector Calls or The Madness of King George or The History Boys, I mean, it's a roll call of absolutely a fascinating mix.
Currently just recovering from touching the statue of Solari.
We're trying to work out what it's made out of. I wondered if
statue
it
statue stuff, surely.
Well, yeah, whether it's solid or hollow, if it's pewter. Is it brass? What is it?
It's, can you help us here? I can't help you with the actual material, but I can say that he's playing Hamlet, and it's interesting that Olivier's Hamlet was the first film in 1947 to win at the Oscars that was not an American film. And so he's legendary, of course, for what he did with Hamlet, for Henry V, for Othello and Richard III.
Quite right, and of course you were very gracious not to actually say, I'm sorry, no point pointing the people in the direction of the listener of Henry V, when of course we are talking about to be or not to be. That is the question, isn't it, Rachel? Whether 'tis nobler in the mind and such like. Rachel, your thoughts so far? In a different world, aren't
you? Yeah, I really was, daydreaming, looking out over the Thames. Yeah, it's a nice statue.
It's a nice statue, Richard.
The word nice was forbidden to me in my vocabulary when I was an adolescent, Alex. Oh,
this is very true, Rachel, as an English graduate-to-be.
Sorry, it's a fabulous statue. Is that better?
It is very true, and pity tis true, and that tis true tis pity. Yes, that's words.
And that brings us to the end of our connection with your good self today, Richard, because it's been short but nevertheless sweet, poignant and somehow marvellous at the same time. Have you enjoyed your little location report with us on the team today?
I've enjoyed it enormously, and I do hope that we can visit the British Film Institute next. It's been fascinating going round the National because there is so much to remember and also so much to admire. Riveting in the history of theatre, and no country has a finer record than our own, apart from Greece.
Lots of other routines. I'll just put this to the team. Ed, do you think we should actually sort of have a full day in London with Richard?
Absolutely not. No, I'm joking. Yes, yes, please. The sooner the better.
Rachel, this could be the killer.
Oh, yes. What? Sorry?
There we are.
Again,
and that's the message.
Mind.
Yes, a day promenading with our audio package and Richard Fitzwilliams. What do you think?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I think you've passed. Katie's gone off in search of food, so we probably won't see her for a few days. But if you see her foraging around London, just pottering in our direction. Richard, many thanks.
It's a great pleasure.